Tina! How are you?
Okay, I suppose. I've had a whole week of nothing. Complete boredom.
Oh, is that good or bad?
Not sure. But either way, I'm going to have a drink.
Where are we off to then?
A little wine bar called the Ten Green Bottles. I haven't been there for a while, but I remember it's owned by a very charming American called Michael.
Okay, look.
Two glasses of dry white, please.
What?
Two glasses of dry white, please.
What does that mean? We got 50 white wines in this place.
Two glasses of decent dry white. We'll have what you recommend.
I recommend them all. You want them all?
I'll look at your list.
And if you say Pinot Grigio, I'll commit harakiri.
He's the very charming one, is he?
No, he's not.
Yeah, well, you see the big red-faced fellow over there with the long coat, the waistcoat, fob watch and bow tie?
That old drunk, you mean?
Well, he's more of a bon vivant, possibly, yeah. A bon vivant is a drunk who wears a bow tie.
Excuse me. Now, I know your face from various libraries at the university, and I know your name will come to me in just a second. Now, don't, no. Don't tell me.
It's Dr. Baldi. Paolo Baldi.
Oh, you're a theology, is it? No, wait. A fellow pointed you out to me in the SCR. Oh, I level with you, Dr. Baldi. He said you were a priest. Not technically slander, but it's only fair. You should know what's being said.
I am a priest on sabbatical. Yes, but I lecture in semiotics. Oh, this is Detective Inspector Tina Mahan of the Gardaí.
Oh, God help us, a priest and a police. There's a microcosm of Ireland standing right before me. The name's Duncannon. Patrick Duncannon. PJ Duncannon, the author, which sounds plausible enough when I say it fast. Now, if you don't mind, I'll fortify myself in the face of the pair of you with a little cigar.
I don't think it's in any official capacity, but you ought not to light that in here, you know.
Ah, now you sound like my literary agent, unlike everybody else.
Mr. Duncannon is an author of detective stories, Tina.
Oh, yes. I don't read those.
Nor do I. Only write them.
It is against the law to do that, Mr. Duncannon.
I decided that as I was not myself a man of the order of a Yeats or a Joyce, I would invent a character, my detective, Rory Cutler, who at least had the wit to appreciate them.
Yes, I was about to say that as I haven't yet got around to reading one of your works, Mr. Duncannon, though of course I have heard of them.
Oh, would you like me to send you all 45 of them? Oh, dear. As for you, why don't you read detective fiction, huh?
Well, they're not realistic. The detectives never seem to do any filing, never seem to requisition stations.
Put that thing out! Smoking is banned in all the bars in this country.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
But you never forget to smoke, do you?
Well, your brother Michael never minded. He would encourage me to smoke, if anything, huh? Cheer me on, he would. Lean over the bar and give me a light like the good fellow
My
he
brother
was.
Stopped running this bar 18 months ago, and if he'd been a bit more... You're still at it. Get out of here.
Oh, I'm going. And just let me get me coat buttoned up, eh? Let me get me coat... Well, it's getting up. And what's wrong with a bit of smoking anyway, hey? They all smoked. All the immortals. Joyce. Yeats, off and on. Well, he got heart palpitations from smoking cigarettes while reading Homer, you know, Father Baldi. Hallmark of a cultured man, if you ask me.
I'm giving you exactly one more minute to get out of here.
It's you that should be leaving, Lee Carter. If you can't stand the smoke, get out of the kitchen, eh? Isn't that what they say, Father Baldi? where's me pocket watch? 6:15. Plenty of time to establish myself in me regular smoking spot. Father Baldi, would you like to join me in a short walk to the riverside?
Very nice of you to offer, Mr. Duncannon.
Oh, Duncannon!
Paolo Baldi.
Paolo, it's Tina. I'm calling about Duncannon.
Oh, it's a funny coincidence. I've just been looking him up. I first tried Crime and Mystery, the 500 best books. He's not in it. Then I went to these
Paolo,
old...
Just...
He's dead.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. I hope it was peaceful.
He was found this morning at the bottom of the Liffey, just opposite the Ormond Quay Hotel. Not 2 minutes from the bar we saw him in last Friday.
The Ten Green Bottles.
But according to forensics, he had a black eye, Paolo. This is a murder investigation.
Oh, dear, dear, dear.
Look, can you meet me there in half an hour?
Yes, yes.
Well, Rin's following a line on this, and, well, I might need some discreet assistance.
How did they come to find him?
Okay, we start at the beginning. Pure chance. Divers from the city's engineering department were inspecting the bottom of the river wall at that point. He'd on the same big coat he was wearing in the bar, more cloak, really. Inside was his wallet, which contained, among other things, a flight boarding card stub. Now I've checked. He flew back Ireland Air from Paris to Dublin yesterday, Tuesday morning. His plane landed at 7 a.m. He lives a couple of miles outside the city, but it looks as if he never returned to the house. Now, his diary was in the pocket. Duncannon wrote with a fountain pen, well, of course. And a lot of the notes on the page have run. But I can make out that he had an appointment with a Simon Quinn at Goodwin and Howell at 4 p.m. yesterday.
Oh.
They were his publishers, I suppose.
Yes, they were. I know Quinn, too.
Well, how?
I'll tell you later.
Now, I can also make out in the diary a lot of entries referring to a Moira Stannard.
Oh, now, I've heard of her.
Yeah, Dublin's own superwoman, literary agent and man-eater.
Yeah, looks after a lot of big names, doesn't she?
But also Duncannon, oddly enough. And she's famous for forming close relationships with certain of her male clients. And her present squeeze is that Formula One racing driver, Fergal Bryant.
Any indication how long Duncannon had been in the river?
His watch. Remember that fob watch from the bar?
Oh,
well,
yes.
It stopped at 6:30. The state of his body suggests to forensics that it was 6:30 last night rather than 6:30 this morning.
So we're saying he goes into the river right in the centre of the city on a weekday in the rush hour?
Looks like it. Now, the thing that bothers me... Rin's fixated on another piece of evidence from the wallet. A stroppy letter about money from the tobacconist's Gilbert Fallon.
In that case, sir, I would go for one of the Arturo Fuentes every time. They're generally mild, and I've never...
My name's Superintendent Rin. This is my colleague, Inspector Mann. We'd like a word, Mr. Fallon.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Fallon.
Yes, well, it can wait a minute, I'm sure. I'm talking to a customer, as you can see. Now, the Opus 10 series of the Rain...
Mr. Fallon, it is a dead man we've come to talk to you about.
Even less reason to hurry then, I would have thought. Excuse me while I light this cigar. Smoking may be banned in the workplace generally, but in here you'll find it's compulsory.
Well, you won't catch me at it. Yes, well, the dead man was a regular customer of yours, I believe. P.J. Duncannon. He was fished out of the Liffey this morning.
The gentleman... and I use that term in the loosest possible sense, liked his cigars. He went for the hand-rolled Partagas, as a rule, the Series D number 4, which is a Robusto.
Would you speak English, please?
A big one.
Oh, good grief! That's a loud bell you've got there. But...
Hello.
Baldy, what the blaze are you doing here?
Superintendent Rin, Inspector Mann. I just dropped by to pick up a cigar.
A cigar? Mann, did you know anything about this?
Is that likely, sir?
Stuart, can you step over here, please, and look after this gentleman?
Mr. Fallon, we believe that Duncannon owed you money, and a considerable amount, by the tone of the letter you wrote to him shortly before his death.
I'll not deny that I extend credit to certain of my customers, but the details of those relationships must remain entirely private.
And how can I help you, sir?
Hello. I've decided to take up smoking.
Oh, good idea, sir. Step through to the humidor.
Yours, like a big fish tank. And, oh, gosh, hot in here.
Humid, sir. That's why it's called a humidor.
Right.
The only walking one in Dublin. Would you like me to recommend a suitable novice's cigar, sir?
Well, I thought I'd go for one of the sorts smoked by a friend of mine, the writer, P.J. Duncannon.
Did you know he was dead, sir?
Oh, I
hope you didn't know him too well, sir. Otherwise, what I've just said will probably have given you a very nasty shock indeed. I've just overheard the news from the gentleman through there. A policeman, he is.
Well, to be honest, I was more of a fan of the writing than a close friend. He was a regular here, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Duncannon was one of our very best customers. Well, one of the best in that he bought a lot of cigars.
Mm-hmm.
Not such a good one in that he didn't pay for them.
Oh.
Well, he would pay, but much later on.
Right.
He would come in and clear his bill as and when he got money for one of his books, you see.
Oh, right, I see. So these strange ones, he's pointed at both ends.
Oh, those particular ones are of the Havana Cuabe brand.
Ah, well, you must have a very good memory to keep all the different types in your head.
Oh, I do have a good memory. I eat a lot of fish, among other things.
Mm. And I suppose you must have to keep in your head the credit worthiness of each customer. Like Mr. Duncannon, for example. I mean, you would know how much he owed the shop at the time.
5,420-odd euros. To give a more exact figure, would be a breach of confidentiality.
Oh, when was Mr. Duncannon last here? Or can't you remember?
Yesterday, sir. Tuesday. He was waiting here when we opened it, no?
Gosh, did he often turn up so early?
Well, normally, perhaps a little later, towards 10 o'clock.
Keen to get his cigars in. I assume he bought some.
Just the one, and he paid cash for it. Mr. Fallon was very insistent on that. It was a Partagas, Series D, number 4. His usual smoke.
Right. What time did he leave the shop?
Well, he stayed for about an hour, having a long chat with Mr. Fallon in the back room. The days when I owed you any favours are long gone, sir, Mr. Fallon politely shouted to Mr. Duncannon. After that, Mr. Duncannon stomped off.
Right.
Fish, you see, sir. Fish and broccoli. Both excellent for the memory.
Yes, I should try to, to remember that. But what about smoking? Does that help the memory?
I don't know, sir. But it makes you think. I see the police are leaving now.
Ah, well, now, I must be going myself, actually.
But your cigar, sir.
Yes, sir, I'll come back later. Did he have any luck with Fallon?
You don't smoke, Baldy. Now, you weren't there to buy a cigar at all, were you?
Well, I was, partly. I am going back for one later.
Well, when you've saved up for it.
All right. Look, I knew Duncannon slightly. I know he frequented Fallon's, so I was curious.
Well, if you keep dogging this investigation, you'll be on charge yourself.
A charge of what?
Obstructing the course of justice, or something like that. Goodbye, Baldy.
Indeed, yes. I'm going, but you might like to know that Duncannon was having heated discussions with Fallon yesterday at the shop, roughly between 9 and 10, and that he owed Fallon 5,420 euros. Huh? I'll see you later.
I suppose he wormed that out of the shop assistant. He's a crafty beggar, isn't he?
It's being a priest, I suppose. He is a manner that invites confession.
Yeah, I'm being punched on the nose. Look, I'm going back to the station, and I'm going to pay a call on the publisher, Quinn.
I'm off to see Moira Stannard.
Right.
Detective Inspector Tina Mahan of the Gardaí. It's about P.J. Duncannon. He was found dead in the river this morning. Just along from the front of this building, actually.
Oh. I saw them bringing something up this morning. Well, he wasted countless hours of my time and life. He might as well waste a few more minutes in death.
May I sit down?
Go ahead. Am I supposed to start talking, or are you?
Oh, sorry. This is an amazing office, Miss Stannard.
Is that relevant? I am a very busy woman, Inspector Mahan. Now, in answer to the question you were almost certainly approaching in your roundabout way, P.J. Duncannon was here yesterday. He arrived at about 2:15 and left at about 3.
Did he say where he was going?
He had an appointment at 4 with his publisher, Simon Quinn of Goodwin and Howell, there, just around the corner from
you. Was he drunk when you saw him?
I see that you've done your research into the man. He'd been to the 10 Green Bottles. It's his regular haunt. Mm-hmm. He'd walk in intelligent, if pompous, come out semi-coherent. Really, the man was insufferable.
But you got what? 10% of his earnings?
Yes, and I got 100% of him. He'd come here almost every day and hang about, attacking any writer under the age of 40, moaning about the neglect of the greats, Synge, Yeats, Joyce, O'Casey. So, he wrote detective books, with a detective, Rory Cutler, who hardly ever detected, but revered these men, and blathered about them constantly.
Were they any good?
I've got better things to do than read my clients' books, Inspector Mahan. I'm a businesswoman, dear. For me, a book has got to be obviously saleable by its title and cover, irrespective of content.
In that case, why represent Duncannon?
I took him on when I was even younger than I am now. He was my first client. And he sold well for a few years, I can tell you. Hence the place in Paris that he owned.
Why did he like Paris so much?
Prostitutes? I don't know. The romantic appeal? Joyce lived in Paris, Beckett lived in Paris.
You ever go there with him?
Can we continue this conversation later?
Simon Quinn, pleased to meet you, Dr. Baldy.
Oh, good of you to see me.
We've met before, actually, at a drinks party at the university. I lectured there in the philosophy department.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I remember now.
You said you might be willing to look at a manuscript of mine.
Oh, yes? Yeah. Whence Semiotics, Echoes of Detection in European Literature.
Well, it's my PhD thesis, adapted for the commercial market. It's basically a romp through Barthusian ideas with illustrations from detective fiction. You know, was Conan Doyle the first post-structuralist?
Ah, and was he?
Well, my conclusion is that I don't know.
Well, I shall certainly look it over. We do have a small academic imprint. Some people say it's just there to stop us looking dumbed down, but...
God, why would people say that?
Well, mainly because of the books we publish. You've heard of Millie May and her self-help books for young women. Super-duper diets, super-duper sex life, super-duper having it all.
No. Well, there was another matter I wanted to mention to you. I was slightly acquainted with P.J. Duncannon, one of your authors.
One of our late authors as of this morning, I'm sorry to say. He was found in the river not 200 yards from here, wasn't he? Hello? No, I'm afraid I'm in a meeting. Oh, well, send him up. Superintendent Wrynn is on his way up, Dr. Baldy. I suppose he wants to talk about Duncannon as well. Come in, Superintendent Wrynn. Simon Quinn. Have a seat.
Incredible. Oh. It's him again.
Oh, you know Dr. Baldy?
Out, Baldy. I'm here on official business.
Yes, of course. Mr. Quinn, could I just double-check something on my manuscript before I go? Oh, sorry, butterfingers.
Give me strength.
Sorry, I'll soon have them all picked up and ordered.
Look, it's all over the flame and floor.
Just a thought, but... you might consider publishing this in two volumes, Mr. Quinn.
Mr. Quinn, you are an editor here. Is that the term?
A senior editor.
Oh, senior editor.
The average age of the senior editors here at Goodwin and Howell is about 29, and most of the directors aren't much older.
No, enough of them, aren't there? I was looking at one of your letterheads down in reception.
I'm 31. I hope to get on the list quite soon.
And when did you last see P.J. Duncannon?
I had an appointment with him yesterday. He was to come here at 4 p.m. for a meeting, but he never showed up. I have to say that was not particularly unusual in his case.
And you were in the office all day yesterday?
All day. Mostly in meetings. Why?
And in the evening?
I left work at 5:30 and went straight round the corner for a drink with a colleague, Tom Walker. Mm. He's in the office just along the corridor.
What time did that drink finish?
Not until closing time, I'm afraid.
And what were you intending to discuss with Duncannon at 4 p.m?
Well, I have to say that... the decision had been made to drop him from our list. We'd told Maura Stannard, that's Duncannon's agent, of this, but we think it only fair to inform the authors in person in these cases, and the task had fallen to me.
When was the last time you actually did see him?
Hard to say exactly. I'd seen him pretty often at book launches, and in a way he's never out of my sight, because, as you can see, there are photographs of all my authors around the walls of this room.
That chap there in the bow tie, it's Duncannon in his younger days, isn't it?
No, that's Malcolm Hibbert. His science fiction was quite big in the 50s. The Man Who Put Out the Sun, remember that?
No, he looks more like The Man Who Put Out the Cat.
Duncannon's on the wall, third from the left.
Good-looking chap once, wasn't he? Why were you going to drop him?
Have you read any of his books? Well, I could let you have a few if you like.
Oh, I wouldn't mind having a look at some of them.
Well, you're not here to scrounge free books, Baldy. Oh, they're in that stack over there, are they?
No, that's the slush pile.
Oh, gosh, it really is a pile.
Yes, and it really is. Well, slush is one word. Now, we have dozens of Duncannons on this shelf. Let me see. Here are some of the early better ones. I think we have, what, numbers 1, 3, 4, and 6 in the series here.
Oh, right, thanks very much. There's Rory Cutler and the Man with Three Eyes. Rory Cutler and the Unstable Horse. Rory Cutler and the Wishful Thinker. Rory Cutler and the Curate's Leg.
Oh, I quite like the sound of those.
He was good at titles.
I suppose he modelled this fellow Rory Cutler on himself.
Oh, yes. Rory Cutler was anti-political correctness, a connoisseur of Irish literature, fine wines and big cigars. He was Dublin-based, but like Duncannon, would frequently retreat to Paris and New York.
He'd drop in for a chat, would he?
Oh, yes. Come in here and talk for hours about Joyce, if you'd let him.
Oh, you mentioned Joyce in the bar last week.
Oh, I'll have to pursue this as well.
You will?
Well, Duncannon was unmarried, so clearly this Joyce is the mystery woman in his life.
The reference is to James Joyce, the author.
Yeah, I knew that. But I definitely knew that. Right, well. Whew. Yeah, well, I think that's enough for the time being.
Yes, and here's my manuscript again, Quinn, all in order. It's 724 pages. When do you think you might be able to get back to me on it, Mr. Quinn?
You want to see me?
I would like a word about P.J. Duncannon. You know what happened to him?
I know who was fished out of the Liffey 2 minutes away from here this morning.
You don't seem too upset by the death of a regular customer.
I can think of a better word than upset. Let's put it that way.
Such as?
Glad.
When did you last see him?
He came in here yesterday at about just after noon.
Was that his usual time?
He would come in at any time. I was usually more concerned with the time he left. I suppose he was a little earlier than usual yesterday. But then he was on the slide, wasn't he?
From what we know already, it seems he'd already visited Fallon's, the tobacconist's. Did he attempt to smoke a cigar when he walked in?
He would have been out of the door immediately if he tried that.
Are you particularly averse to smoking, Mr. Carter?
I am averse to lingering and painful death.
At what time did he leave here yesterday?
About 2:15.
And what did you do after that time?
I went home. Tuesday's my half day. I work mornings only.
Do you live alone?
With my talent for sociability? Are you kidding?
You don't seem a natural bar owner, I will admit.
By natural bar owner, I take it you mean a jovial idiot. When my brother Michael died 18 months ago, he left me this bar. I needed the money, so I took it over.
And was your brother a jovial idiot?
He wasn't so jovial towards the end, believe me.
What did he die of?
Cancer.
I'm sorry. You and your brother are originally from...
New York.
And P.J. Duncannon would quite often visit New York, I believe. It was his favorite spot, apart from Paris.
And you think that's a big coincidence, right? Oh, you're spooking me with all these big coincidences.
What were you doing at 6:30 last night?
I left here about 3 and I went home.
Home's where?
Towards Sandy Cove.
Now, I'm afraid there's two of you and only the single chair.
Ah, one faces the usual mental tussle between sexism and chivalry.
There's one. Well, we'll all stand. How about that?
Duncannon knew he was about to be dropped by his publishers, didn't he?
He did.
Because you told him.
I told him yesterday that this would be the likely outcome of his 4 o'clock meeting with Quinn, yes.
But he never got to that meeting.
That's what Quinn says, I believe.
Mm-hmm. As far as you're concerned, he left here at about 3 p.m.
You can verify that with my assistant Amanda, if you like.
And what were your movements afterwards?
I worked here until 7:30 p.m, as the girl will testify. She was here throughout. Late working hours are part of the deal with me. It's when I make my calls to America and do my reading.
Oh, I thought you said you didn't read the books.
Contracts, dear. They're my favourite genre. At 7:30, I went out for dinner.
With Fergal Bryant?
Yes, and then we went on to the charity ball at the Custom House. Just me, him, and the mass media of Ireland.
How did Duncannon feel about the prospect of being dropped?
How would you feel? It was particularly bad for him, I suppose, because he wanted to write his autobiography.
Oh, that's interesting. Did he have a title for it?
I told him he should call it Stop Me if you've heard this one before, but I don't think he was going to go with that.
Wonder how much all that stuff in her office is actually worth.
The vase on the desk. What bothered me was the grey stuff in the bottom. It's just a trace. Most of it had been swept away, but I could have sworn it was cigar ash.
Oh.
Well, why would she... let Duncannon, if it was Duncannon's ash, why would she let him use the vase?
Hello? Tina Mahan? Oh, Superintendent, hello? Yes? Oh, really? Right. Okay, yes. Yes, I'll get on to it straight away. That was Rin. He wants me to get back to the station and start making calls about Duncannon's movements in Paris. He's also got news about Bryant. He assaulted a reporter at a Grand Prix last year.
Oh.
Cigar ash. She'd never let anybody smoke in that immaculate office of hers, would she? Hey, where are you off to?
Back to Fallon's. I want my cigar.
Even the word is wrong in your mouth, let alone the actual thing. Oh, and watch out for Rin. He's heading for Fallon's too.
Hello again, sir. Come back for your cigar.
Yes, is Mr. Fallon in?
He's in the back room. Would you like to step through into the humidor?
Oh, yeah. Smoking yourself today, I see.
I always try to set a good example by smoking as much as possible. This cigar is a Royal Jamaica Double Corona.
Oh, it's almost as big as you are, if you don't mind me saying so.
Well, it's not a beginner's cigar, if that's what you're driving at. I'd advise a smaller one in your case. A Panatella, perhaps. Uh-huh. Unless you're taking up cigars to look swanky at work. Of course, it's none of my business, sir. But what line are you in?
I'm a lecturer.
I knew you were brainy. Well, quite brainy. Smoking's good for thinking, as I said.
The French have a saying, qui fume prie, he who smokes prays.
He who smokes prays. I think we should have it up here in the shop. We've already got, you don't have to be mad to work here, but it helps. Of course, some strange people say that smoking's actually sort of evil, so it can't be anything to do with praying.
Oh, I suppose that in biblical terms it's a toss-up between the body being the temple of the Holy Spirit in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and take no thought for your life, and so on in Matthew chapter 6.
It's very interesting that the Bible has things to say about smoking cigars. I didn't know that. Now, how about one of these, sir? The Arturo Fuente Petit Corona. A mild cigar of the smaller size, but still full of flavour. Sample the aroma, sir.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. But I wondered if I might try one of Duncannon's favourites as a sort of tribute to the man.
The Partagas Series D number 4, sir.
Mm.
Oh, look. It's the policeman again. He's looking at you, sir.
Baldy!
Seems a bit upset about something.
Baldy, are you following me?
Well, Superintendent, I was actually here before you, so if anything, it's you.
That's enough of your wordplay, Baldy. Now, son, where's your boss?
Well, he's in the back room, looking at the accounts.
Is he now? Right.
Mr. Fallon, I found out how much Duncannon owed you. Over 5,400 euro.
That boy Stewart told you. He's such an irritating little squit.
It was not Stewart who told me, though it was an irritating little squit. Duncannon owes you a substantial amount. You argue about it, and he's found to have died a few hours later. Now, what am I to make of that?
Would I really kill Duncannon?
Yeah.
He knew his Monte Cristo number 5s from his Excalibur number 4s. He knew his Cohiba Exquisitos from his Cuaba Divinos. He knew to only buy cigars from a shop with a good humidor. He knew that a mild cigar went best with a Highland malt. Although, God knows, he committed the terrible solecism of drinking red wine with cigars. At which I notice that you do not wince, but no gentleman should ever do it. But compared to many of my customers, he appreciated what I had to sell. He would recommend the shop to people, encourage the smoking of good cigars. He brought us in a good deal of business over the years. Men will come in here, Superintendent, and believe me, they all too often want some cheap cigar. A packet of Relaxo Mediums, let's say. And it's deeply painful to sell them such a brand.
I had an aunt who used to buy me a packet of Relaxo Mediums every Christmas, together with a gift box that contained a bottle of wine and a glass big enough to take the whole bottle.
A woman of discernment, I can tell.
Ah.
Yes, Duncannon's bill was a little out of hand, but he would always pay up when he received an advance for a book.
But there wasn't going to be another book. He was finished as a writer. Where were you early yesterday evening?
I can't remember.
Mr. Fallon, I'm arresting you on a charge of murdering P.J. Duncannon. Anything that you say...
So you'll take that one then, sir? The Partagas Series D number 4? Now, you'll want to keep it moist until you smoke it. Could I interest you in a small, easily portable humidor?
Oh, well, what do they start at?
About 800 euros.
Oh.
Alternative, I can put it in a sealable plastic bag with a squirt of water. That will cost nothing. The choice is yours, sir.
Well, that reminds me. Duncannon brought a cigar when he came here yesterday, didn't he?
He did, yes. That's what one said, of these yeah. very ones.
Yeah, and did you put it in a polythene bag for him?
Yeah.
Even though he presumably has a humidor of his own at home.
He meant to smoke the cigar fairly soon after buying it. Oh, look. The policeman and Mr. Fallon are coming out of the back room.
Oh, well...
Do you think Mr. Fallon's been arrested?
He's probably just helping with inquiries, you know.
I'll throw you in a small cigar cutter at no extra charge.
What, do I really need one?
It depends what you want to do with the cigar. If you want to smoke it, then yes.
Well, I'll just... let me.
Not bad. Book and a cigar. Oh, it's ideal.
Oh, I could get used to this.
What on earth's the matter? Let me get you a drink of... Holy mother of God. You're smoking a cigar and I'm using my best china as an ashtray.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Reed.
Oh, well, I'll fetch you a glass of water. Here we are.
You've thrown it on the cigar.
We had to put the thing out somehow. Father Baldy. Now, there's no smoking in this house, as you know very well.
I know.
It's part of your tenancy agreement. Thank goodness I came back early. Otherwise, I might have found you lying dead in here, and my dining room curtains impregnated with fumes for weeks, and ash all over the carpet.
Mrs. Reed, you're just constructing ever more morbid fantasies. Oh, it was only one cigar. Oh, don't worry, I'll get it, Mrs. Reed. Hello.
Paolo, it's Tina.
Oh, hello there.
Are you all right?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of things. The most important first. Mm. Lee Carter's brother, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked into the exact cause of death and... Well, can you guess?
Lung cancer?
That's it. And he didn't really smoke.
Well, except passively. Years of Duncannon cigars.
More than that. One of the detective constables here has been a regular at the 10 Green Bottles for years, and he knew Michael Carter. Says he would be seen to smoke the occasional cigar. Duncannon would give him them at first, and later on he bought his own.
Gosh, you made Duncannon sound like a drug pusher.
Well, you're very pro-smoking all of a sudden, Paolo.
No, not at all.
But maybe that's what Duncannon was, in Lee Carter's eyes. A sort of drug pusher, just as malign.
Mm.
Well, at 6:30 he was having supper with his mother, he says.
But, maybe the mother was in on it.
Maybe. Now, second thing. Ireland Air have been on to us. Duncannon was supposed to fly back from Paris on the Monday evening, but he missed his flight. That's why he came back first thing on Tuesday morning.
Ah, yes, I thought it was an uncharacteristic time for him.
Are you sure you're okay?
Yes, I've just been relaxing with the P.J. Duncannon book and my cigar.
What?
the cursed thing's not out here. There'll be an inferno if you don't do something. Father Baldy!
Look, I think I probably better go, Tina. Look, I'm going to make a visit tomorrow morning that should throw some light. I'll call you tomorrow lunchtime. Okay,
Father
bye.
Father Baldy! I'm jumping out the window if you don't do something.
There, Mrs.
Oh, dear.
There, I've definitely stubbed the cigar out. It has turned out not to be a job for the fire brigade after all.
Well, thank goodness. And thank goodness my watch was running fast so that I came back early.
Hello again. I have an appointment with Simon Quinn.
It's Dr. Baldy, isn't it? You came before.
Yes, that's right. Before I go, could I just ask you a couple of quick questions?
Certainly.
Have a seat, Dr. Baldy. It's going to have to be a brief meeting, I'm afraid. I'm due in with the editorial director. I assume it's about our friend Duncannon, because if it was concerning your manuscript, I'm afraid I haven't quite got around...
It's about Duncannon, yes. See, I've been reading some of his books.
I see.
At 5:30 on Tuesday, the day of his death, you went straight around the corner to have a drink with a colleague. But you didn't go with the colleague to have the drink, did you? So you were careful not to lie about that, in retrospect.
Dr.
Although you did use a calculatedly ambiguous form of words. And when I asked you about the last time you had seen Duncannon, you gave a reply that seemed convoluted. You said you saw him every day, in that his photograph... It was on your wall. They were the convolutions of an honest man. You saw Duncannon at 5:30 p.m. on the Tuesday, didn't you? You saw him as you were dashing from your office to the bar where you were to meet your colleague, Mr. Walker.
How do you know?
See, again, you don't lie, but just use a form of words that might deflect... See, P.J. Duncannon was the sort of man who could be erratic about timekeeping. He was also, generally speaking, behind the times. But on Tuesday, he was punctual to a fault. He was also, however, running ahead of time, albeit only by 1 hour, and this was because Paris is 1 hour ahead, and he'd forgotten to adjust his watch on returning to Dublin. So he left Moira Stannard's office at 3 p.m, which by his watch was 4 p.m, came here, it's only a minute away from Moira Stannard's, for the 4 p.m. appointment, and was told at your reception that you were in a meeting. The precise time of the appointment was not gone into between, you know, him and the receptionist. He left no message about having called, so you were spared the need to lie or dissemble on that point, at least. Now, he was probably quite cross about your being indisposed, because for once he'd got an appointment right. Except that he hadn't. So he went away and... well, let's go out on a limb and say that he'd had a few glasses of red wine. You know, at 6:30 p.m. by his watch, 5:30 p.m. according to the rest of Ireland, he was standing outside the Ormond Quay Hotel, finally smoking the cigar he'd purchased that morning and that had, so to speak, been burning a hole in his pocket all day, but which he'd apparently been unable to get around to up until that point. Duncannon liked to smoke outside the Ormond Quay Hotel at 6:30, didn't he?
How should I know?
Yeah, it's a clever reply. You should be a lawyer, not a publisher.
I know nothing about the law.
Now, that may be about to change. Now, I'll tell you why you should know about the 6:30 p.m. cigar. Because it's mentioned in books 2 and 5 of the Rory Cutler series. Yes. You see, these were the two of the first 6 that you didn't give me, and therefore they were the first 2 I read.
Where did you get...
Well, they're available in my local library. Perhaps the result of an oversight, I'm not sure. But in the first of these 2, Rory Cutler and the Million Men, Cutler, for which we can read Duncannon, states his fondness for a cigar by the river at that hour in a passage towards the end. Just a second, I have the book here in my pocket. So I can quote you, if you like. He stationed himself, as usual, outside the Ormond Quay Hotel. Architecturally, it was little more than a great Georgian packing case.
Thank you, that's enough, Dr. Baldy. Do you mind if I just reach into
What are you doing?
It's all right, Dr. Baldy. I'm not the type to keep a gun in my desk. As you correctly pointed out, I can't even bring myself to tell a lie. Nope. I have here a packet of cigarettes. Extra mild ones. You could probably have predicted that. I very rarely smoke. Do you mind if I light one now?
No, go ahead, please. Now, come on, tell me. How did it happen? In the middle of the city? And in the rush hour, too?
It was 5:30. I was walking along by the river wall on my way to the bar. I should have been on the other side of the road, but I like to look down at the water. I looked up and Duncannon was in front of me. Oh, he was drunk, of course. And he was smoking. He barked at me. He was really very rude.
Where were you at 4 o'clock? Couldn't face telling me I was superfluous to requirements, that is? That I was being kicked out to make way for some new diet book?
He then started criticising me and all publishers about how we're too commercial, too concerned with glamour and youth, and I was angry because he was wrong, and I was angry because he was right. Above all, I did not want him standing in front of me. I'm 31. 31! I've been here nearly 10 years, and I still have the slush pile to deal with. You've seen the long list of directors here. I'm not on it. Look at all my authors. All black and white photos, all taken years ago when they still had hair, still had teeth. Oh, I could deal with Duncannon when I was in the office. That was my job, and I accepted it. But on the street, it was a different matter. He had on his damn bow tie, his great cloak. He looked like some big kid dressing up as an author. All the most crass, clichéd ideas. I didn't really mind that he was like that. But I minded that this company should think that I was the right editor for him. Oh, I knew why I got all the deadbeats. Because I was a nice chap. I was patient with them, could let them down gently when it was time to give them bad news. Duncannon hadn't had a full-sized review for years. His sales had stagnated. It was like that with all my lot. I mean, I'm presiding over a literary graveyard here. And he had that cigar of his, waving it back and forth in front of me, blowing smoke at me. Nobody smokes anymore. I mean, it's illegal, for heaven's sake.
He was pointing the cigar at me, stabbing it towards my face, calling me a wimp for not daring to fight his corner with the bosses, and I struck out at him. I've never hit anyone before in my life. And I looked again, and he wasn't there. I can't swim, Dr. Baldy. And I don't believe he could either. You know, it was beautiful in a way. I mean, the speed of it all. Well, it was like a disappearing trick, perfectly executed. I should have run for help, but the thing was so obviously finished, a fait accompli, and with all the hundreds on either side of the river, nobody saw. Well, of course it was dark by then, but even so, it seemed the nearest thing to a miracle. Well, that's not quite right.
No.
One man did come hurrying up to me. I recognized him. He works around here. And he said, I could have sworn I've just seen something fall into the river. Did you see it? And I said, no. Because, you see, I hadn't seen it. Which only made the whole thing even more... I go to jail for a long time, won't I?
Well, you could fight it. I mean, there's only circumstantial evidence.
But I won't. As you know very well.
Fallon's been unarrested, I suppose.
Oh, yes. Of course, it went against the grain with Rin. But then most things do... I'm glad it wasn't Moira Stannard, you know. Oh, I've just called her. It was cigar ash in the vase.
Ah.
From an earlier visit by Duncannon, months back. She'd left her office for a second and found him flicking ash into the masterpiece by Wilhelm... What's his name?
Oh, so he didn't do it because he felt he had the right?
No. He did it because he thought she wasn't looking.
Mm-hmm.
Paolo! Mm.
It's a Partagas Series D number 4. Very fine cigar, you know. Qui fume prix.
Well, you quite look the part, I must say. Though I know you're going to collapse in a fit of coughing any second. Paolo, that's littering.
Well, I think a good cigar pitched into the river is a more fitting gesture in this case than a bouquet of flowers. Wouldn't you say? Come on, it's cold.
In The Smoker by Andrew Martin, Baldy was played by David Threlfall, Tina by Tina Kelleher, Rin by Owen Rowe, and Mrs. Reed by Margaret Darcy. Quinn was Aidan McArdle, Duncannon, Niall Buggy, Moira, Jer Ryan, Fallon, Barry McGovern, Stuart, Christopher Routh, and Lee Carter, John Moratus. Baldy was based on an idea created by Barry Devlin for Sarah Lawson Productions and developed by BBC Northern Ireland Drama. Baldy was directed by Lawrence Jackson.